Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
What's the reason to duck?
It's here. There's no reason to duck.
With your hosts, Dan Wiederer and Mark Grody.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into the Take the North podcast along with Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune and frequent Important Score contributor. He is Dan Wiederer. I am Mark Grody of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. What's going on, Danny boy? How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited for today. We've got a pretty fun episode for our audience, and I'm ready to get rocking.
Yeah, let's do it. Without further ado, this man does not need to spend time backstage. We're bringing him center stage here right now, ladies and gentlemen. He's a former Bears great, quite frankly, for wide receivers. Former Bears wide receiver Allen Robinson was, of course, with the Bears from 2018 to 2021. In 19 and 20, he totaled 200 catches for 2,397 yards, 13 touchdowns, and very important to us in the collective Bears media and the Writers Association. In 2019, Allen Robinson was the winner of the Media Good Guy Award, which we appreciated. And so it's full circle here. Dan and I both covered you back in the day. Allen, it is a pleasure to have you on the Take the North podcast. How are you, sir?
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And I'm doing very well.
Yeah, Allen's was a locker stall that we loved going to because you'd always get some honest feedback, some good insight, and hopefully he's able to provide even more honesty now that he's not as close to it as he was back in the day. But Allen, listen, like, you know this town, and when you came in 2018, you experienced what this town was like when it was on fire, and right now I think people want to get that fire lit again. I think one of the cool things right now is you also have a unique perspective on Ben Johnson, the new coach that's got everybody excited. So we wanted to start there, and we'll definitely get back in the what we call the cold tub time machine and take you back into your Bears days here in a couple minutes. But given what you know about Ben, given what you know about the stage that he's about to jump on here in Chicago, what are your initial impressions of what this match can be for the Chicago Bears?
I think it'd be a really good match. You know, I mean, Ben is one of those coaches where he's very detailed. He's going to hold the players accountable. You know, and I think when it starts as far as creating a culture, I think that's where it starts. You know, so Ben's definitely going to start with creating a great foundation. And again, as we see any really good team or any really good franchise, you know, when it comes to how they can build and where they need to start, it's the foundation of it. And I think that just seeing some interviews throughout OTAs and seeing him speak about players' availability, you know, that was a huge thing that I think that he kind of instills into his players. You know, it's not just about creating the trust between coaches and players, but more so player to player. You know, and I think playing in Detroit with Ben Johnson, that was something that helped us out a tremendous amount. Was, as far as my time being there, was there was so much accountability from player to player. You know, when you looked across from you, you knew that you could trust the guy to do his job.
Can you do us a favor just to build on that really quick? Because accountability was a word that was said a lot around House Hall last year. And there was a lack of it, obviously, that led to the Bears losing 10 consecutive games and players really crying out for more accountability. As somebody that spent so much time in the league, how do you define it? How do you know what accountability is, and how do you define it as a player?
Yeah, you know, I think it's guys being accountable for what their job and what their task and role is. I think that being in Detroit, our roles were very defined. And being able to, when it comes to being accountable, is if it was my job to block the safety, you know, no matter where that safety was at, I knew going into the play, it's my job to get there. You know, so I had to make sure that I was in a proper split. I had to make sure that I was doing everything necessary to get the job done. And the expectation was for me to get my job done. And if that wasn't done, then I would be caught out about that. And again, I think when it comes to accountability, that means that everybody is held to the same standard. You know, if this is what we're asking from one person, that's what we're asking from everybody. And everybody has to hold that bar as far as what their job and what their role is, play in and play out.
Yeah, so that's so important. I mean, the trust part, like you said, the accountability part with Ben Johnson, as we're, you know, drawing on your time with Detroit. What about Ben Johnson as an offensive coordinator in terms of X's and O's? Did he open your eyes? Is he as innovative as everybody says he is?
Definitely. And I think the biggest thing with him is playing to player strengths. You know, from even some of the opportunities that I got in the Lions offense last year, you know, were certain things that he saw in practice in me, you know, whether that was winning go balls and one-on-ones. You know, it came to San Francisco week and Ben Johnson had all the trust in the world as far as me winning backside on a go ball in a one-on-one situation. You know, he dialed it up, it was thrown, and I made the play, you know, and those are kind of simple, you know, simple instances where, you know, it's X's and O's, and it's also knowing your players and knowing your personnel and being able to continue to cater to that. And I think he does a phenomenal job when it comes to that. You know, even, you know, I think about Sam Laporta and some of the routes that he ran. You know, he was a very versatile guy who was able to run a lot of different routes and create a lot of different matchup problems. You know, and Ben would always joke, you know, and say that there aren't many tight ends in the NFL running dagger routes, you know, which is true. So being able to, you know, have some of those nuances, you know, where Sam's able to do some things that a lot of guys don't see on a regular or consistent basis. You know, he's able to do that and he's able to bring that out of the offense.
Alan, Ben came here to Chicago with a reputation as being very smart as a football mind, as being very detailed. And I think we've all checked those boxes and said, yeah, confirmed. Those are two things that are there. I think one thing that has caught everybody a little bit by surprise is how sharp his competitive edge is and how hot that fire burns. What did you experience in that regard in terms of that type of his personality that really shows itself on a regular basis?
To be honest, you know, I think Ben's competitive nature is, I will put that top of the list. You know, he's one of the most competitive coordinators that I had been around when I was in Detroit, you know, and that's just his sheer competitiveness, drill to drill, period to period in practice. And also when it comes to game day, you know, as far as what he's hunting and just kind of how that competitive X and O chess match, you know, last year between him and some of the other coordinators, you know, that specifically stuck out to me. So that is something that's, you know, very, very high on my list as far as, you know, I just see Ben Johnson as a coach. You know, again, I mean, it's not just the X's and O's, you know, to me, when I think of Ben Johnson, it's the competitive nature. It's the fiery, detail-oriented operation that he runs.
You said what he's hunting, and he said something to Caleb Williams when he got here about, like, we don't just want to beat opponents, we want to embarrass them. And it felt really sharp to say that right out of the gates, but it sounds like that's what you're describing, as a guy who's, like, not just interested in succeeding, but doing so in a way where it's pretty pronounced.
Definitely, you know, and that's why I use that terminology. You know, I think when I think of Ben Johnson, it's not just staying alive play to play. You know, it's about hunting big plays, hunting different looks. When you see a zero blitz against Minnesota, you know, we're hunting big plays. We aren't just hunting to be able to get the ball out. You know, I remember last year watching Chicago against Seattle Seahawks last year, late in the season, you know, and it was like the last drive of the game and Seattle was continuing to run zero blitz, you know, and it didn't seem that the Bears had a real answer for that, you know, and I immediately thought, I remember watching the game with my dad, you know, and I was like, in that situation, you know, as far as a Ben Johnson ran offense, you know, they're going to hunt the big play. You know, you aren't just going to sit back and blitz zero Ben Johnson. You're not going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to hunt the big play, and Ben Johnson is going to be super creative too. At least that's on the resume, Alan. And I remember 2018 like you do very well, and what Matt Nagy was doing with that offense and all the trick plays and Santa's sleigh and all that. So you've kind of been around that a couple of times. What is it about that part of Ben Johnson's personality that allows that to be so successful and really at times a key part of what they're doing, quite frankly?
Yeah, truly what really makes that successful, I think, is not only Ben Johnson trusting his players, but it's the trust that the players have in each other and just allow Ben Johnson to cause whatever he wants. You know, I remember last year, again, man, we scored on a hook and ladder against Arizona Cardinals. We scored on a hook and ladder against the 49ers. Playoff game, we had a reverse go for, I think, maybe 60 or 70 plus yards. You know, so for us, we had the stumble bumble against Chicago in Chicago. So for us, all those things came down to the confidence and the trust that have been built over time, you know. And when you have that kind of trust from player to player and also coaches to player, anything that's being called, I think guys have the full amount of trust that that play is going to work, you know. And again, and when you're calling stuff like that, you know, you're able to work it throughout the course of the week. You know, you see the different looks on film and you study it as far as the possible looks. And again, you know, and it's and in those situations, you know, I remember practicing plays and stuff like that, you know, in Detroit. And again, everybody had all the confidence in the world. You know, those didn't really seem too much like trick plays. You know,
they
seem more so up like, you know, like dialed up scheme plays that once we saw the look, you know, maybe a third and long, you know, and we know that they're going to be soft on the outside on the corner, you know, and we run an under hook and ladder and, you know, we're out the gate. So it was a lot more dialed up than it was kind of trick plays, in my opinion, you know, because those looks were so studied and the preparation going into those plays were so high.
I think you guys had like six or seven lateral plays that resulted in either a touchdown or a first down last year. Yeah,
which is pretty unheard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, Penny Sewell was it Penny Sewell throwing a pass against the Bears?
He never got it off, but I did want to bring that play up because it was early in the game and obviously the ball goes to Panay and he's supposed to throw it and he gets stopped. It's like a sack for a loss of one, but the entire building of Ford Field comes alive and it's a loss of yardage.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a statement, right? It was a bit of a game-opening statement there.
You know, it's one of those things that, you know, Ben Johnson has that we do what we want, not what you allow type of mentality when it comes to offense. You know, like I said before, from a player standpoint, you love that. You know, when you have a coach that has that amount of trust in the players, what he's calling, and just you feel that he has always had such a good grasp on the game. You know, like I said before, for me, it was such a unique thing that I had been around because it was, you know, from play to play. Again, we weren't just hunting, you know, a yard here or a blade of grass. It never seemed like that. You know, what we were hunting and the looks that we were hunting, even in the run game, you know, we had 70-yard touchdown runs, you know, which a lot of times, you know, is very much unheard of.
So obviously the million-dollar question in Chicago is what Ben can get out of the quarterback he's been asked to work with. And Caleb's got a ton of talent. There's a ton on film that tells you the flashes are there. What are you most intrigued to see with this union between the coach that you know so well and the quarterback who everyone's trying to figure out how good can he be?
You know, I think it's his sheer talent and athleticism, but also the talent that's around as well. You know, I think Rome is going to be a heck of a player and really ascend in year two. Obviously, you guys have DJ Moore, you know, who's a proven player in this league as well. Cole Kmet, you know, drafting the rookie tight end. You know, it's so much talent and so much versatility across the board in those skill position rooms to whereas being able to untap that quarterback position, you know, and that's more so just a confidence thing. And when I say a confidence thing, not more so a confidence within self, but at the quarterback position, you know, I truly believe it's more so confidence in what's being saw out on the field as a, you know, similar to what was saw throughout the course of the week in practice, you know, because once you kind of are able to build that confidence where, you know, you have the familiarity with, okay, I remember seeing this look, or I remember seeing, okay, if we run this, they may give us that. And you're able to start to really see those things click because, you know, it may be third down, you know, and knowing how a third down practice goes on a Thursday, you know, you're going to see different looks. Like I said before, similar to us, when we played against San Francisco, you know, I had a play dialed up, you know, against man to man. As soon as I lined up, you know, it was the look that I was expecting. You know, I see the safety in the middle of the field. Based on me kind of adjusting my split, I knew I would kind of be able to get a little bit inside leverage to give me, you know, of the ability to win on the go. So being able to see things like that, you know, creates the confidence play to play. Or if it's a run play and I'm coming in the box to block a safety, I know when I motion, you know, he's going to bump into the box and linebackers will kind of boss over, you know, and those are things that you're looking for, you know, play to play. And when you see that consistency, it builds the confidence to say, okay, this is exactly what we practice. This is what we prepared for. We can just go out, you know, they're doing what we are expecting them to do.
It was a weird, uneven season for Caleb Williams. I don't even know if I'm using the right words to describe the Bears' year last year, which they obviously, as you know, Alan, the Bears fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron, during the midst of the season. They did something unprecedented for their organization, firing the head coach in season. So there were all sorts of issues around Caleb Williams last year. So it's fair to think that maybe some of his development was stunted. So my question is, what is fair to expect on how good Caleb Williams will be or should be in year two, considering his immense talent. And now, as you mentioned earlier, having the weapons around him, and we think the ideal head coach in Ben Johnson.
Yeah. You know, I think the ideal scenario would be just being able to get the ball to the playmakers on a consistent basis and on a timely basis. I think that's the main thing, you know, again, being able to draw plays and getting the ball into the hands of the playmakers and allowing them to do what they do and not trying to do too much. When I say that, meaning not having negative plays, you know, being able to stay off the ground, you know, and not having sacks. And I think from a quarterback standpoint, you know, you want to see that next step, meaning that, you know, we're really limiting the amount of negative plays that we have. You know, even again, when I think back to our offense in Detroit last year, there were very few times that I can think of where we had negative plays. And I think that once you see that from a quarterback position, you know, they're starting to take the next step, because then, once you kind of get that consistency, you may be able to gamble just a little bit more. But, you know, again, you want to be able to stay away from the negative plays, you know, stay away from taking sacks. You know, in certain situations, it may not be there to throw the ball away. You know, you want to see positive plays and just good habits being able to start to be consistent.
So married up with that, I did want to ask you about the mentality of going for it on fourth down so consistently and what that does on third down, because all of a sudden, if it's third and eight, you guys are pretty comfortable getting 5 or 6 yards because, you know, on fourth down, you've got something cooked up. And so how does that change the overall mentality of an offense when, you know, fourth down is going to be green light, green light, green light, and now third down, the pressure isn't as high to move the chains?
Yeah. You know, I think it creates a little bit of flexibility. Again, I think that takes some time to get there. Again, I think that's something that kind of Detroit had developed just in their culture over the years, you know. So, but again, for us, you know, third down, at the end of the day, you know, we always want to stay out of the fourth down situations. You know, we had the confidence within each other to be able to go for it. But, you know, third down was something that we still took extremely serious. You know, we didn't want to have to continue to result to, you know, getting it on fourth down. If we had to, so be it. But as far as what we were looking at and how we were measuring ourselves, you know, third down was a big thing that we had a ton of emphasis on as far as us being able to be a successful team on third down.
What did you like about Caleb Williams's year last year?
I think he battled, you know, I think he battled. And when I say battle, you know, you could see him out there battling, you know, trying to keep plays alive, trying to do everything that he thought in his power would be able to help the team be successful. You know, at all times, it really didn't come to fruition, if you will. But at the same time, you know, he tried to battle, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, when you take some bumps and bruises early, sometimes that can help you a little bit along the way, because you can kind of, you know, you understand what it's like to handle adversity, you know, what that look and kind of feels like. So, you know, for him, I think that that's something that he can take with him. You know, obviously he's a very talented player, but having some of that adversity and being able to kind of, you know, battle back in some different situations, you know, I think that will kind of benefit him down the stretch.
Alan, the entire football world was watching on Thanksgiving last year. What do you remember your reaction being to those final 40 seconds or whatever it was there at Ford Field?
Yeah, trying to watch the game and also looking at the game clock, you know, I think that everybody kind of got a little bit away from the play clock, if you will, a little bit because of how much time was left on the clock, you know, once they kind of went into that play. So then being able to huddle up, you know, for me in my mind, you know, I'm thinking it would be some kind of a quick play, you know, still having a timeout left and so on and so forth. So again, in that situation, in my eyes, you know, I'm always thinking two plays, you know, and that's being able to get the ball in play. If you do get down, bang a timeout, be able to kick the field goal or whatever you truly decide to do. But for whatever reason, it was kind of strung out a little bit, you know, and then the play was extended as well. And then it was a deep ball thrown. And sure enough, you know, the clock ran out, you know, but I think everybody on our sideline was pretty surprised. You know, we just knew that it was going to be two plays. You know, we knew that it was going to be one play and then a possible field goal attempt. So once the clock ended up running out, you know, based on us trying to, you know, make sure that the defense is, you know, ready for the play and so on and so forth. You know, when you look back up, it was no time left on the clock.
It felt like there was 10 seconds where you're just like trying to figure out, wait, is the game really over?
Yeah, it was. And that's kind of how it was on the field as well.
Oh man, yeah, and then of course it's off to the races for us because we go into the locker room after that, Allen, and all hell is breaking loose, and eventually Matt Eberflus, the Bears head coach, is fired in season. And look, I know you've been away from the Bears for a little bit now, but you spent, like we said, some significant time, some serious years of your prime with the Chicago Bears. Were you shaking your head? After all of that, were you in disbelief that the Bears fired a coach in season? What was your reaction to all, we'll say it, it was a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, we were so deep into our season to whereas, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't really have too much of a focus on that at all. You know, just kind of obviously that was the first time, you know, so kind of being a little bit surprised, obviously, because, you know, Chicago doesn't necessarily go that route or they hadn't before. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you know, for us, we were so deep into our season, you know, my main focus were what we were doing, you know, and us just, you know, trying to continue to, you know, compete for the number one spot in the division, so on and so forth. So yeah. I really didn't have too much of an opinion, you know, other than kind of being a little bit surprised.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Price.
Alan, Grody and I were talking yesterday about how much you experienced in your four seasons here. And there was a lot. Like, I mean, you won a division title. You lived through a pandemic. You saw coaches leave, quarterbacks changed. All the things that you saw in 4 years was pretty much the full spectrum of things that have gone on for this franchise for a long period of time. You came in here in 2018, joined a team that had only won 5 games the previous year, and that group caught fire. And it wasn't immediate, but it did catch fire. What do you remember about when you sensed that that team had a chance to break through in the way that it did?
Yeah, you know, we were, I believe we had an early bye that year, and I think we were maybe 3-2 or 2-2 or something like that. Coming off a bye week, and then we just kind of started to roll. I think for us, we had all the confidence in the world in each other. And once we started to make plays and guys got a real feel and grasp of the offense, it was such a confidence that started to build. You know, it was confidence amongst the staff and the players. It was a confidence amongst the players with other players and so on and so forth. So, you know, we started to roll. And again, once you kind of create that energy in a lot of different teams and situations, you know, nobody is really questioning anything that's going on. And I think that when you have that from a team standpoint, that's truly when you start to roll. When it's, you know, any play call that comes in, you believe is going to work, you know, that's offense and defense, you know, whether that's, you know, going forward or a special teams trick play, whatever it may be, you know, things are starting to work. And we started to build that, you know, I want to say, even though we lost the game, you know, I want to say that Miami week, you mm-hmm. know, we knew that we had a good team. You know, we were on the road. Mm. I think we were down 14 at halftime.
Hot game, up, too.
Oh, yeah, God, I went through three shirts, yeah.
Yeah, and we ended up losing that game. But I think that we had everybody kind of found that confidence in each other with just how we were able to move the ball down the field late in that game. You know, we were able to come back and score, I want to say 28 points or something in the second half. You know, so the games like that is when you build that confidence.
And it's then Akeem had that forced fumble on the goal line in overtime. I thought you guys were going to steal a magical win there. Yeah.
No, it was amazing. I mean, you and Mitch Trubisky did have chemistry. You guys did. There was an elite defense to that team. And I look no further, Alan, than as long as we're reminiscing here just a little bit, because that was a good time for everybody.
Yeah,
even the reporters that covered that team, that, like, I know it ended horribly, obviously, on a double doink, but what a fun season right from the beginning. Even though it was a loss to the Green Bay Packers, you guys marched down the field on that first drive, and we're like, this is it, man. Yeah. Welcome to the Matt Nagy, Mitch Trubisky, Allen Robinson era.
Yeah, and it was exciting too. You know, I was Khalil had just came into town shortly.
Yes.
He had a monster start to that game. He had a pick six. I think he had a forced fumble as well.
Yeah.
You know, so again, kind of just coming into that season, you know, and that was another thing that sparked it. You know, I remember waking up, I want to say it was in the it was like the long weekend after the last preseason game, and seeing that we had traded for Khalil Mack, you know, and me being in Khalil's draft class and knowing him a little bit, you know, it just sparked a lot of excitement around the building. You know, we knew that we had brought in free agents, and we knew how Camp Pat went. So, you know, we were already excited to be there. Me, Taylor Gabriel, we drafted Anthony Miller, Roquan Smith, you know. So we had a lot of new guys, but it was an exciting energy, you know. And then to top it off, we got Khalil Mack.
What were Matt Nagy's touches to that first year? He was obviously, it didn't end for him in Chicago like he would have wanted it, but he was a coach of the year that first year. And obviously he got your guys' attention pretty quickly with the energy that he put in the building.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it was a fun environment to come to work every day. You know, obviously when you're winning, you know, it makes it like that. But at the same time, you know, I think just, you know, kind of how we went about our business, you know, again, Coach Nagy allowed everybody to kind of be themselves. You know, we had a good energy around the team, a very competitive group. And it was exciting, you know, and I think even for the guys that were there in Chicago the couple years or so prior to that, you know, who had some losing seasons, you know, to kind of have that new energy in the building, you know, have some vets on offense, you know, who've kind of been there and done some things before, you know, having a coach like Coach Nagy, you know, who's been a part of some good teams as well. You know, I think just kind of bringing that to some of the young talent and stuff that was already there in Chicago, you know, it was like a perfect match.
I'm going to throw this at you because I remind people this all the time. This will be my 13th season on the beat, and the Bears have only had a winning record in one of them, and it was in 2018. Not only did you guys have a winning record, but you won 9 of 10 to finish the regular season. And the only loss is an overtime loss in New York, which was a total circus game with Chase Daniel playing quarterback and Tariq Cohen throwing touchdowns. And it just like felt like those last 2.5 months were like the carnival. You know, it was as good as it gets. And the fun just didn't stop building.
Yeah. You know, again, it was the momentum that we created. Also, I remember, you know, playing against the Rams, you know, that year as well. You know, they were a team that came in, you know, primetime game. And that was another thing, you know, we had some good showings in primetime games. You know, I want to say Minnesota was a primetime game that year, the Rams, you know. So for us, you know, we were winning games, you know, at that point, like you said before, Tariq Cohen throwing touchdowns. It just seemed like whatever we kind of did, it worked. And like I said before, when you had that confidence in the players, you can do whatever you want as a team.
The Rams game, that was a signature game. I remember the Rams, it was a freezing cold night, if I remember.
It was, wasn't it?
The Rams weren't that interested in being there that night, were they?
No, they weren't.
Vic Fangio made them less interested in being there also.
He did. And it's funny because we kind of, I had spoke to this maybe earlier in the week, you know, but I think Vic is a person who kind of, you know, transcended defenses a little bit as far as what they're doing now, which is kind of his overall branch and tree of disciples, you know, kind of coming from that to kind of create that too high system, you know, from Coach Staley, you know, and different guys like that. So, you know, they definitely didn't want a part of that.
Never had to worry about the defense when Vic Fangio was here. It was a beautiful system. Matt Nagy be like, you good? I'm good. I might borrow a player every once in a while in one of my plays here. But I had to ask you too, Alan, when you look back on Bears quarterbacks, on the quarterbacks that you had with the Bears, and Mitch Trubisky was the main one. There's no doubt, you know, the plan was you or Trubisky to you, and there was a chemistry. You had some nice numbers here with the Bears. But what happened with Trubisky? What was the, I guess, fatal flaw in his game that didn't allow him to develop into the quarterback that we all thought he would? Because we never really saw it with Trubisky the way that we wanted to relative to where he was drafted.
Yeah, you know, that's tough to say. You know, I also think that, you know, if we had Trubisky for another year, you know, I think that we could have done a little bit better. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for us, we were right there kind of on the cusp of being, you know, right there as far as the average team being 8-8, you know, those last couple seasons that we had with Mitchell. But I think something that continued to grow, and when you look at, you know, different offenses across the league, was, you know, it was the chemistry between player to player, you know, which I think that if you do have that, you know, I think that you have a lot of room to still grow. You know, even though that we weren't able to, you know, hit certain heights as far as the offense, I think that the chemistry between me and Mitchell was high, you know, between Mitchell and Tariq was high, you know, between Mitchell and Anthony Miller was high. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it was just a few different things that we needed to improve and get better. You know, I think that us improving the run game, you know, and constantly doing that would have helped as well. You know, I think that we kind of You know, we had a little bit of a change of scheme from year one to like year three or so. But you know, I think for us, if we had a maybe, you know, I think one more year, I think would have helped us out a lot, just from kind of, you know, with the personnel that we had. Because I think that, you know, the personnel that we had aligned a lot with Mitchell's skill set.
That's interesting. So was the chemistry then not there with Justin Fields? I mean, it seemed like it wasn't the same.
Yeah, I mean, it was a far different scheme, you know, and as far as far different scheme, you know, as far as players' abilities and so on and so forth, you know, when you think about it, when we were with Mitchell, you know, we ran a lot of 11 personnel. Even early on, you know, we would have, you know, if it was two backs, two receivers, one tight end, you know, Tariq could play in the backfield or in the slot as well. So as far as the scheme that we had with Mitchell was kind of an 11 base personnel kind of scheme, you know, and I think that once we had Justin, that changed a little bit, you know. So as far as players and where they would play, you know, even for myself, you know, when you have an 11 personnel, you know, I could play outside, I could play inside, you know, and it's kind of a good match of both, you know. And then once we had Justin, it kind of went to me more so only playing inside on third down, if you will, and a lot more two receiver sets with the kind of offense that we were running. So it was a change of scheme, and it was a lot of learning for everybody. Even with a person like David, you know, I mean, I know David now can run out of anything, but coming out of college, you know, he ran a lot out the gun, and that's kind of certain some of the things that he was used to. You know, even from again from a running back standpoint. So you know, when you do change schemes, there is a part of the personnel that kind of has to go with it. And you know, I felt that we was more so built for the Kansas City kind of offense schematically than what we started to go towards with my leg.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sure, with Justin.
Alan, you touched on it a little bit, and Grody mentioned your numbers in 2019 and 2020 at the outset, and they were elite numbers. Like there were graphics every week on social media where you were among the top three or five guys in the league, catches, contested catches, yards, touchdowns, and then it fell off. When you've done some self-reflection on why that production didn't sustain past 2020, what conclusions did you come to?
Yeah, so from an overall play standpoint, you know, again, schematically, that last year in Chicago, you know, it just was a totally different scheme. And as far as the routes and stuff that I was running, and just kind of, you know, us getting accustomed to a new scheme, you know, not having a lot of time and chemistry to be able to develop that. You know, I think Justin started game two on, you know, and I want to say in training camp, I caught one pass from him the entire training camp. You know, I was catching passes from Andy, and we were kind of building that chemistry, you know. So with Justin kind of taking the reins that early in the season, you know, it was a lot of just kind of learning on the fly. You know, that could be, you know, whether that's back shoulder passes, down the field stuff is, you know, and you can only get so many reps throughout the course of the week, you know. So being able to kind of learn different things on the fly from an offense and getting used to a quarterback and him getting used to me, that was tough, you know. And then kind of going to LA, you know, I felt good in LA. I had a phenomenal training camp. I ended up breaking my foot halfway through the season. And it was kind of something that just kind of continued to get worse. I had a stress fracture. You know, so I kind of started feeling that around week five or week six, you know, and for me, that's kind of just what has kind of hindered me a little bit over the past couple of years as far as just kind of getting back from that foot injury.
I'm going to give you one more question on 20, I guess it was 21, because there's a portion of the Bears fan base that wonders why Justin wasn't given the keys to the car from day one of training camp. I've always pushed back on that and said you had a coaching staff that was basically told win or you're fired, and they weren't about to just hand over a team that had playoff potential to a rookie that wasn't ready for it. What is your player's perspective on why Andy was the anointed starter and why that felt like the right decision going in? If you felt like it was the right decision, or if you would have done something differently and given Justin the green light from square one.
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing is, you know, Andy was there in the spring. So, you know, even who knows if Justin had been drafted, if somebody had drafted Justin earlier, if we would have even taken a quarterback. You know, so when you start kind of creating those scenarios, Andy had already a step and a grasp on the offense and some of the changes in the direction that it would be able to go in, you know, rather than having a rookie that you draft, you know, a little bit later, you know, and he can't have any scheme input. You know, I mean, he hasn't really played all that much. So when it comes to, you know, things that he may like, you know, as opposed to a person like Andy, you know, he has a lot more scheme and offensive input as you're putting in concepts, as you're kind of changing and tweaking things and kind of creating a little bit of a new scheme and new identity than we had in years prior. You know, so I don't think it was any rush to kind of make him come in and kind of, you know, because again, it was a little bit different and new to everybody than the offense that we had kind of ran in years prior.
And Alan, what about the now? Are you looking to hook up with the team this year? What's the scoop, man?
Yeah, so I'm still working out and staying ready. You know, again, for me, I took a little bit of more time this off season. You know, again, I had kind of been nursing this foot injury over the past couple of years. You know, I felt really good last year during season, but I wanted to take a little bit more time this year to let my body heal up. You know, I played in the preseason last year. We went a couple of games into the playoffs, so I had played a little bit more football than I had in a couple of years prior. So this year, I wanted to take some time to let my body heal up a little bit. You know, and I'm staying ready. You know, again, if the right opportunity comes, you know, and again for me, you know, at this stage of the game, you know, it's more so an opportunity thing, you know, a right situation, you know, things that kind of work out, you know, that way rather than just being able to jump on any roster, you know. So again, I'm staying ready, you know. For me, I still can go. You know, I think about last year, some of the practice clips and one-on-ones tape and stuff like that, you know. I had a really good year just overall, you know, last year. I know statistically and stuff like that, you know, you may not be able to see that stuff, but just overall, you know, body of work, you know, week in and week out, you know, practicing, you know, and stuff like that. You know, I thought I took some strides last year.
I know you've thought about your post-playing career for a long time, even when you were playing. What are your thoughts of when the playing days are over, the things that you might like to do? I know you thought about the agent route at some point. I think media has been in your mind at another point. Where's your head at now?
Yeah, you know, again, for me right now, media, you know, especially still kind of, you know, playing and training and stuff like that, you know. But again, I'm not opposed to being an agent or anything like that. You know, I think for myself, you know, having a long career, you know, I've been able to learn a lot of different things in a few different industries, you know. So for me, just kind of figuring out what comes to me, you know. Even then, when I think of an agent, you know, I think about, you know, some of the most impactful people that have helped me out in my life and seeing, you know, the kind of impact that they can have for others, you know, which is a reason, you know, why I've even kind of spoken to that. And also in the media, something that I went to school with, something that I've done a lot, you know, over the past really 14 years of my life, you know, three in college and 11, you know, professionally, you know, being in the media a decent amount, you know, so I feel comfortable in that space as well, you know. But again, I mean, I think, you know, just how football, you know, kind of caught me, I think whatever else comes, you know, we'll do the same.
If you were to become an agent, I think that's interesting that you mentioned that as a possibility. What do you think is the most important thing young players entering the NFL need to know? You as the veteran now, what would you want to know walking into the NFL that maybe you didn't know?
I think just keeping the main thing. You know, I think that when you think of a lot of players, you know, a lot of players try to do things early. Like, you know, as involved as I am in the media now, I wasn't always like that. You know, for me, early on, it was keeping the main thing. You know, even as far as off season, you know, I would be very selective as far as some of the extracurricular and other things that I embarked on. You know, for me, my main thing every off season was, how do I get better? You know, what are my points of emphasis and points of attack going into this off season, and how do I check off those boxes to continue to get better as a player? You know, and that's, you know, off-season routine, you know, from a recovery standpoint and training standpoint.
I did want to ask you from a receiver standpoint, because so much of this league is about quarterbacks anticipating windows, about being able to process what a defense is going to do before the snap and then reacting in real time if it changes to what you anticipated. How do you describe the complexity of the quarterback position, given the unique vantage point you've had for so many years playing with so many different guys as a receiver?
You know, I think it's very complex. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, I think the biggest thing is that defenses are always changing. You know, I think of now, you know, defenses run so many different zone man hybrids. You know, early on in my career, you didn't see a lot of match defenses. You know, now you see a lot of matches. You see a lot of people starting in quarters and, you know, playing palms, you know, quarters that can kind of change into cover two and so on and so forth. So for quarterbacks, it's always being able to learn and try to stay ahead of the the game and ahead of some of the things that defenses are doing. You know, that's why I say all the time, you know, for guys sometime with a quarterback who may be injured or kind of missing out for a year, you know, things and defenses change, you know, and even trends in the league change as well. Like I said before, when I first came into the NFL, everybody was running Seattle cover three to try to stop the run. You know, now it's a little bit different. Everybody's running much more too high safety stuff to try to eliminate the explosive pass plays, yeah. You know, so it's being able to kind of see that and adapt and adjust to what some of the trends are and just kind of how those are changing.
That's really interesting. And it does like to hear it coming from a player too, and realizing the changes that come. And then, you know, I think about with the Bears, and you mentioned some of the weapons that the Bears have going into this season with DJ Moore, and you mentioned Cole Kmet, and they've got Colston Loveland, the tight end that they just drafted. They drafted a second rounder wide receiver named Luther Burden. And Roma Dunze, of course, that's a huge part, hopefully going into their second year. But with all of those different weapons around, I know this sounds crazy because you want tons of weapons. Is it going to get hard to keep everybody happy, Alan? I mean, I know you weren't like that, but some guys are like that they want theirs. And if they're not going to get theirs, they're not going to be happy. So like, is it going to be a difficult trick for Ben Johnson to turn to get everybody happy on that Bears offense?
You know, I don't think so. And again, just coming from an offense that had, you know, a lot of weapons as well. You know, think about, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williamson, Sam Laporta. You know, there were a lot of guys to get the ball to in Detroit, you know, and a lot of proven guys as well. You know, and I think that when you see the overall success that the team is having, you know, I think that the true unselfishness speaks when it comes, you know, to the record. You know, again, at the end of the day, last year in Detroit, everybody could have got a little bit more and was deserving of a little bit more. Jahmyr Gibbs could have got more carries. Demo could have got more carries. J-Mo could have got the ball more. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's an all-pro guy. He could have got the ball more. Sam Laporta, you know, but at the end of the day, I think the little bit of less is more reflects in the record.
I'm going to ask you this because it kind of touches on what you got there. You've been part of pretty impressive runs in Jacksonville, Chicago, and Detroit. Is there a common denominator in those seasons, whether it was 17, 18, or obviously last year in Detroit, that you see in those teams where you're like, yeah, that's the special sauce that makes NFL teams tick?
Two things. I would say the competitiveness and also the unselfishness. You know, again, I think that when you go back and watch Jameson Williams on tape last year for a guy who got in the range of 50 targets, you know, and probably was, you know, well deserving of getting the ball more, you know, he would also in the run game go dig out safeties. Yeah. You know, it was never a point in time, you know, where guys became bigger than what our overall goal was. Now it's to win a division and win the Super Bowl. And I think that when you have the whole team that kind of, you know, embarks on that, when it comes to getting the ball and guys staying ready, because, you know, that's the thing about it. You want to mentally stay ready. You know, at the end of the day, you know, when your number is called on, you're going to be ready to make plays. And I think that truly being unselfish, you know, reflects on that.
Alan, go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say that the 25-yard reception you had from Mitch in the playoff game on the fateful drive, does that still replay in your head sometimes about man, that was supposed to be the completion that led to the field goal, that led to the victory, that led the path further down the path? Do you still replay that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it still hurts. You know, it still hurts. You know, when you again, for us, you know, just I remember going into the huddle, you know, everybody being ready with it was very little time left on the clock, to be honest. You know, and Tariq started off with a great return.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it was everybody mentally being ready and wanting to make a play on that drive to put us in position to win the game. And we thought we had did such. And, you know, to this day, you know, I think even when I speak to guys, you know, whether that's Tariq, Demo, Mitch, you know, I think that everybody can kind of speak to that and just say that, wow, you know, we thought as a group that we did what was necessary to be able to win the game. But again, I tell everybody, sometimes, you know, what you may think is necessary is not good enough, and a little bit more was needed, you know. And ultimately for us, what would have won the game would have been a touchdown. And I think we had an opportunity to have a shot in the end zone late in that game, and we didn't come up with it. So, you know, when you have situations like that, you know, you needed a little bit more, and unfortunately we came up short.
And you wanted that ball in the shot in the end zone, right?
Definitely. I want to say we were in like kind of like an all go. I think Anthony Miller was up the seam. Yep. And I was on the outside against, I want to say Rasul Douglas at that time. And, you know, I definitely would have loved the opportunity.
Yeah, that was something, man. I was doing the sideline reporting for you guys and Alan, so I was down there right behind you guys when the double doink occurred. And there's just it's the most helpless feeling there is. You know what
every
I mean?
Time like, I, every time I hear a ball hit the upright, you know, I think of that now when I hear that sound.
Still. Okay.
Yeah, I remember Prince that night saying it was like you were running on a treadmill and someone pulled the plug and you just got shot off the treadmill and you're just like, what just happened?
we got to wind down here with you, Alan, but I do want to ask you this too, just really quick. Who knows, maybe you'll play this year, maybe you'll play for three or four more years, but when you're done playing, and I know we talked to you a little bit about that, like, will the Bears be your team? Like, or do you have loyalty to Jacksonville? Like, how does that work? And yeah, I know you're a Detroit guy too, obviously.
I've thought about that, you know. It's some tough choices there, you know. But again, that's a good problem to have, man. And I have a lot of love for Chicago. I'll say that, you know. So I've thought about that. You know, I haven't thought about it too much just yet, you know, but I'll be interested to see, you know, just kind of what I come away with and how I factor in some of the pros and cons to that. But you know, I definitely will say, you know, it's a good chance that it'll be in Chicago.
Judging by your lid, I take it you're enjoying baseball season right now.
I am. Tigers got the best record in baseball. At least they had. You know, they played so many games where it changed so much, man. But, you know, I have a lot of love for the Tigers, too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, they just took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs, man. Alan, you know how Cubs crazed this town is, man.
And they had a big win earlier today against Pittsburgh.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. Alan, this has been a blast, man. I hope that we can continue to do this, even if you play, man. Like,
come back and see us.
We'll do. I appreciate it.
Yeah. That is the great Alan Robinson of the Chicago Bears joining us on Take the North Live. Thank you, Alan. Appreciate you, man.
No problem, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Ton of fun.
Man.
Absolutely. That was great stuff. A great 45 minutes there with Alan Robinson. And you said it, man. He did. He had 2 elite years with the Chicago Bears. And I thought it was interesting, Dan, to just get a little bit of texture from some questions that I did not have answered from back in the day. And, you know, especially to know that the offense was so different under Justin Fields that it was almost untenable for that group.
Yeah. And, you know, interesting to hear that from a player's perspective. And listen, like, Alan was one of those guys that when he was here, you know, you'd go to his locker, like I said at the outset, and you'd be able to get insight and you'd be able to get valuable perspective that helped you. Yep. You cover the team in I've got a list of 30 questions that we could have went with him for 2 hours, you know,
and
rolled on with it. So hopefully he'll come back and see us again in the not too distant future. Cause you know, there's still a lot for me about 2019 that I've never fully unpacked, right? Like, you remember how much hype and hope and excitement was going into that season with legitimate Super Bowl aspirations, and then it just didn't get there. And I'm sure, and I know from talking to guys that were on that team, that there are still scars about why 12-4 didn't lead to a promised land, but instead led to 8-8 and 8-8, and then the purgatory year where Matt ended up having a rookie quarterback and Andy Dalton and everybody got fired and here we are, right? Like, it's like, why did that roller coaster ride end the way it did? I'd be curious to get more.
We'll have him on again. We will. Sure. I'm positive he would come on with us again, and we can get it'll be little by little. We'll unpack this thing. It's, you know, and we had a little bit of a time constraint there at the end because it looked like Mr. Robinson's phone was about ready to go. So
he's going to be getting into the media perhaps one day. And, so he's going to be a competitor, right? Like, you lure him to Chicago and you make him claim Chicago as a city. He might be doing his own podcast that we're going to have to go head to head and, you know, butt heads.
That's true. How about that, man? Yeah, but he probably should. I mean, that's like the Detroit folks. I don't know if they're going to, but he did. He, like I said, his prime years, I mean, he had some great years in Jacksonville too, but his prime years of his NFL so far, unless there's a big relaunch here for Alan Robinson, were in Chicago during those years that we were just talking.
Grody, you know, one thing that he said early on that really made like my hair stand up and I was just like, you know, at attention, was just talking about how he would put Ben Johnson's competitive edge as the number one defining trait, right? Like, we've talked about him as a X's and O's mastermind and a guy who is into the details, and it's like, no, man, like, it's the competitive fire that makes him who he is. And so I love hearing that, because that's consistent with what a lot of people have said. We've started to experience it, and we haven't even gotten into any of the nitty-gritty with the head coach and the intensity that's going to come in training camp in the regular season and beyond.
How about the fact that, like, one of the first words out of his mouth about Ben Johnson were accountability, which you followed up on right away? You're like, oh, yeah.
Let's figure that out. Yeah, tell me about that, right? How are we going to get that? Hard. Like, it's a hard thing to master in a leadership position, but you feel, particularly from guys like that, and there are a lot of them in the league that are wired – to be successful. They want that. You know, it's not like it's not an inconvenience to them to be held accountable. You know what I mean? It's like, no, like this is number one on the prerequisite list.
Yeah. And it keeps other people from breaking the rules that you're following, you know, like a veteran guy that's been playing for 6 years, watching a guy that's loafing off to the side, be like, yo, I can't be the one that corrects this every damn time. If I'm going to be accountable and running this play at full strength, then he's got to do the same thing too. If you see something, say something, Dan. Always remember that.
No question about it. No question about it. I'm glad we got that in because that was a really fun conversation at this time of year. It's great to, you know, get down some other side paths and hopefully we got more of those to come.
It felt like that felt really good. I mean, just for so many reasons, like the fact that he has great insight on Ben Johnson, and then just to talk about a winning season with you and I do this about once every 10 episodes, we end up waxing poetic about 2018.
That's it. Like,
so why not have one of the stars of 2018?
I remember talking to Steve McMichael back during the Bears 100 season, where he says, like, everybody gets mad at the 85 team for being the team that's just still in the spotlight. He's like, this is not an exclusive club. We're happy to welcome more winners into the club. Like, we're not manning the door and being like, no more winners here. Like, they want more winners. And we've only had the 1 year here in the last dozen or so that has been successful. And we revisit it all the time, and we'd love to have two or three in a row. And you see the relationships you build with guys when you're able to be part of a winning season, where like the tone every day is a little bit more fun, right? And like, then you can draw those connections we had with Alan, and then he'll come on and share it with us. And so hopefully, fingers crossed, somewhere along the line, there will be a run of sustained success while you and I are still on the beat and still young enough to do something about it to be able to capitalize on a run of Bear success.
See, and that's coming from a couple of veteran grizzled reporters in market number three. Yes, we do want to see happy things for the team that we cover.
Yeah, you negative Nancys always want to see the bad stories.
Hey, we'll be negative Nancys when it's the time is right.
And too often the time is right, right? Yeah, like that's the problem. Is that's my whole thing. It's like I can only judge the show that I'm being shown, right? Like this is what's on my screen. Like this is what's before me every day, and like I can just tell you what's happening, and hopefully one day I'll tell you this is all good. This is all roses in 2018. Like, again, Grody, I always talk about it, like 9-1 to finish the regular season, right? What a surge, where it was just like every week it's like, what are the three fun stories we want to tell this week?
And it was, it wasn't boring. It wasn't boring football. It was fun football from so the elite defense, the silly plays of Matt Nagy, which were fun. I know it wore thin, but it was fun while it lasted. I don't know where the running game was half the time, but it was a very interesting 2018, which we will probably refer to again in an upcoming episode. But I think that's probably gonna
time machine, baby.
Hey man, this is progress for me. Usually my default is just start talking about 80s Bears. I've tried to rectify that problem because we're losing people that were fans of the 80s. So 2018 is a way better place for me to go, Dan.
I'm just going to tell you also, I'm very proud of you because you're working your butt off these days, and the volume of pep you've had in these last two episodes, it's off the charts, and it's great stuff to see.
I got to keep, hey man, if you're going to be the juice guy, I got to at least come close to matching. I know I can't get there, but as long as I can like get close to your juice level, then I'm happy. You've inspired me again, Dan. Again.
He's pep, I'm juice.
And we are out of here. For Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune, I'm Mark Grody of The Score. For Adam Studzinski, our producer, thank you so much, Adam, for the work that you do, and thank you to everybody for watching and listening to the Take the North podcast.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. Bears.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.